Hello and welcome to this podcast from the International Accounting Standards Board. My name is Robert Bruce and I am a financial journalist. With me today to discuss the ISB board meeting held between the 14th and the 18th of March 2011 are board member Steve Cooper and ISB Director of Technical Activities Alan Tashira. Can we start with you, Steve, and just talk us through what happened, what was discussed about insurance?
Well, Robert, we had quite a lengthy session on insurance, more than one session, dealing with a number of separate topics. Discussions will continue, in fact, next week in Norwalk with more considerations on insurance. But just perhaps list the issues that we looked at. We looked at presentation, different presentation models, how to run off a composite margin if we were to choose to adopt that approach. Practical expedience on discount rates. We had an education session on risk adjustment, an education session on an alternative method of dealing with the discount rate on participating contracts, when to recognise an insurance contract, when to first recognise assets and liabilities, and indeed the definition of an insurance contract. So the decisions on all of these are listed in update, but I thought that I'd just focus on two or three of the main issues, perhaps the important issues that we discussed in this podcast. Firstly, presentation. The exposure draft that we issued had some various alternatives on presentation, and we got some good feedback on that. But I don't think we have sort of reached the definitive answer on presentation in that, and we do need to do some more work. So we have been talking about this off and on during the re-deliberations. We had another session to look at some various alternatives. I think we made some good progress. We didn't make any definitive decisions, but we provided staff with an indication of the way we want to go. I think most of the board were particularly keen on getting some sort of volume information into the income statement. The exposure draft had largely proposed focusing upon the margins, which wouldn't then give information about the volume, the premiums written, giving a number equivalent to revenue in, say, revenue recognition. We also have the whole issue of volatility to look at, and one of the ways of dealing with some aspects of the volatility is through presentation, separating the sort of the value changes from the more ongoing activities within an insurance business. So we made some good progress on that, and that'll come back to us for further decisions later on. Another key area in the exposure draft is composite margin versus risk margin. One of the problems with the composite margin approach, should we go down that route, is how to run off the composite margin, whether it's over the full life of a contract, whether it's over the coverage period. In what way do we do that split? The exposure draft, most particularly the ASB discussion paper, because this was the approach that they favoured, looked at ways of running that off through a formula. We had some discussion of that formula, its inadequacies, how we might modify it. Some of those modifications actually take the composite margin closer to a risk margin type notion. So we had some discussion of that, and again, that's something that we will come back to. Remember that we took some decisions on the discount rate last time, and in particular to rule out some ways of calculating the discount rate and focus on a principle that is essentially the same as what we had in the exposure draft, but looking at the calculation slightly differently to get over some of the problems that people had with that discount rate. We considered this time whether we should have a practical expedient for that discount rate, whether we should permit, for example, a corporate bond, a high-quality corporate bond rate. We decided not to. We decided that we should reconfirm the decision that we took, and that will be the way in which we would look at the discount rate. We had an educational session as well on perhaps an alternative way to look at discount rate, dependent upon sort of how we measure the assets. That was interesting and useful. It wasn't incompatible with the decision we've taken. It would be sort of extending that decision. And just finally, perhaps if I can mention risk adjustments. We had an educational session from Munich Re about how they calculate risk adjustments. We've got two more educational sessions on this next week in Norwalk. And this is sort of part of our process of assessing risk adjustments, risk margins, composite margin, and find a way forward to resolve what you remember is a a difference of opinion between the two boards, the FASB favouring the composite margin and the ISB and the ED favouring the risk margin. So if we're going to get to a converse solution, we have to really sort of bottom out on that particular issue.
So that's the hard work for next week.
Yeah, so we've got several sessions next week on this, and indeed, I think the following week as well.
The Monday, Tuesday, the week after, so it's been a 3-week run, I think, of meetings that will be.
Good. Anyway, shall we move on to where we are on leasing, Alan?
Thanks, Robert. The I guess sort of three decisions I'll just reflect on two very quickly. Most important one was probably to do with short-term leases. And what the boards have been looking at is the situation where perhaps you're leasing some asset for, say, 3 or 4 months or something like that. And the question is whether, you know, you get to an end of an accounting period and you're 2 months into a three-month lease, whether you should be required to capitalise or put the right of use on the asset on the balance sheet, and you've got the payment stream. You have to go through a discounting exercise and things like that. And what the boards have both affirmed is that we should have what we call a practical expedience for this, and that you're allowed to basically have a short-term exception or exemption from this. It's not mandatory, and essentially it's going to be an accounting policy. So you're entitled to pick this up as an accounting policy choice, essentially, for a class of underlying assets. So you imagine if it's you've got some sort of building or equipment that you tend to lease on sort of 6 or 8 month periods, then you'll be allowed to simply treat this as being outside of the lease.
Yeah.
So you won't recognise any lease assets for that, or the lease liabilities. You'll end up essentially getting a straight line basis for this. It'll be just the lease payments.
I think the main benefit of that is that it avoids the necessity for companies to do all the calculations to determine whether it's material or not. We're essentially giving them a practical expedient to say, look, if it's short term, it's highly likely to be not material, so you know, don't go and start searching for these things.
Yeah. You think about the way businesses operate now, they have accounting policies for capitalization rates for some expenditure. They might capitalize anything above £500 or dollars, and this really reflects the way they operate as well. So I think that's a good outcome, and people will hopefully benefit a lot from that. The other two small decisions that we'd made were ones to do with the situation where you've got perhaps a purchase built into it, and you're trying to identify that as whether it is a purchase or not. So you've got we're asking the question: is it actually a lease or is it a purchase or a sale? And basically, we're going to let the revenue recognition standard look after that. We're not going to have anything specific within the leasing standard that's going to deal with that. Because the real risk is you put something in there and you've got some requirements in the revenue standard, and you can either have a crack between them or an overlap, and then creates uncertainty for people. And the last one I'll touch on is just accounting for purchase options. This is a situation where you might have a lease, say, for 10 years, and at the end of it there's an option to buy. And the question is, what do you do with the payment if it's an option to buy? What the board's decided is that if there's essentially a significant economic incentive to exercise the purchased option, you know, a lot of people talk about bargain purchases where you pay a notional penny rents at the end. When there's an economic incentive to exercise it, then you should count that as part of one of the payment streams, so you have to bring it on. And we're going to make sure we're going to use consistent language in here. So you recall, I think last time we discussed renewal options and whether you look at the minimum lease period or whether you pick up the renewal. And you pick up the renewal if it's you've got significant economic incentive to exercise that renewal option. So we're just aligning the treatment with that. And in this case, one way to think about it is you're extending the lease forever but getting control of the asset. So I think it's quite a logical decision as well, and that's tied in another aspect. And as with Steve was saying with insurance being on the agenda next week, we've got quite a raft of papers for leases as well.
Yeah. Good. Well, let's move on to a quick update on hedge accounting. Steve?
The comment period for the hedge accounting exposure after expired quite recently. And during that period, the staff, together with some board members, have done a very extensive outreach program. I can't recall off the top of my head how many countries and how many meetings, but I do recall that it was over 2,000 individuals.
2,500 and 7,000 continents. So you're right about the countries, but at least seven continents covers most of the world, I think.
Yeah. So I think the staff have done an awful lot of work on that, and I think have got some very useful input by interacting with people face-to-face in these meetings. In addition, we've also got 200-plus comment letters. I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head. But the staff have provided us with a summary of the comment letters. There'll be a more detailed analysis when we come to re-deliberate individual issues, and a summary of what they learnt during their outreach. And I think fair to say that the reaction to the exposure draft has been largely positive. People welcomed many of the changes that we have proposed. I think some wanted us to go further in certain areas, certain risk components like inflation and credit. Some people feel we should permit the identification of these and their designation as hedged items. Others wanted further clarification, particularly on the effectiveness issue. So there's a number of areas where we need to do some work to clarify, and there are also some areas where we need to think carefully about what we recommended in the ED in the light of the comments, and then make decisions about whether we make changes or not in those particular areas. And the staff will be bringing the more detailed analysis of those individual issues back to us in the coming meetings.
Yeah. Of course, it's only part of the puzzle, because the issue of portfolio hedges is also very important to some parties, and we expect to have that back on the agenda in April. We have a staff member working on that now, and we'll start to debate those, because I think people would like to see the shape of the portfolio hedge requirements as we start to finalise the general hedge accounting.
Okay, that's covered the main aspects of what you've been doing this week. What's up ahead?
Well, up ahead, two things. One is we've got this, another bunch of standards going through the last bits of balloting, because this week we also cleared the last hurdles on three. It's the post-employment benefits, the amendments to IAS 19, other comprehensive income, amendments to IAS 1, and fair value measurement. We set the effective dates on those. Well, essentially, we'd already set the effective dates on post-employment benefits and other comprehensive income, but the board just reviewed that in the light of the more general consultation we've been doing. So I'll just confirm other comprehensive income that becomes effective from 1 January 2012, post-employment benefits from 1 January 2013, and fair value measurement from 2013, 1st of January as well. And then next week, the ISB is across in Norwalk in continuation of our joint meeting with the FASB. So we'll be there Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. And then on the following day, the Thursday, is an insurance working group meeting here in London.
Excellent. Lou Crotty in search of solutions.
Exactly.
Thank you very much indeed, Alan. Thank you very much indeed, Steve. And finally, the official disclaimer. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the participants involved and are not necessarily the official views of the ISB. For the official record of the meeting, please go to the ISB website. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.